Good morning. My name is Jessica Severs. I am a fellowship member, and I also serve on the board as chair-elect. Welcome to the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship of Manhattan. Whether this is your first visit or 400th, you are welcome here. Unitarian Universalism strives to embrace and include all in a loving and caring community, at the same time as we try to create a world that is diverse, hospitable, joyous, and just. Wherever you have come from, whoever you are, whoever you love, whatever your journey has been, it has led you here, and we're glad to have you. We invite visitors and guests to sign our guest book at the welcome table just inside the front doors. On a form, you can request a complimentary subscription to our newsletter. I'll be available after the service to answer any questions you may have about the fellowship activities and programs or about Unitarian Universalism in general. Please join us after the service for coffee and conversation, which today is in the narthex just outside the kitchen window. Today is the annual craft and bake sale, and that will be in the Alsop room, and there will be a photo booth set up front. Donations all go towards the General Operations Fund. So I'd like to draw your attention to the announcements in your order of service. All of these events are open to our guests and members alike. If you have any questions, please look to the person that's listed for the contact. So today we have a special guest, Reverend Sarah Oglesby Dunnigan from the UU of Topeka, who will be speaking today. December's theme is hope, and here are some opening words from Leslie Takahashi. We are waiting, a reading for Advent. This is the season of anticipation, of expecting, of hoping, and wanting. This is the time of expecting the arrival of something or someone. We are waiting. This is the time of living in darkness, in hues of unknowing, of being quiet, of reflecting on a year almost past, waiting for a new beginning, for a closing, or an end. This is the time for digesting the lessons of days gone past, anticipating the future for which we are waiting. Waiting for a world which can know justice, waiting for a lasting peace, waiting for the bridge to span the divides which separate us. We are waiting for a promise or a hope. For all of this, we are waiting.
And in this congregation, we are not waiting for the baby Jesus to be born, although some of us find joy and possibility in that story. We're not waiting for the Messiah to tell us how to end suffering and connect to that which is holy. We're not waiting for enlightenment. We're not waiting for new leaders to show up and fix the communities we live in. We are not waiting for a sudden windfall of resources to blanket all our needs. We are not waiting for answers from experts or perfect solutions to problems. In this congregation, we are waiting for each of us to commit to a future distinct from the past. We are waiting for each of us to show up to a new conversation in which we know that we are enough, and we know that we have power together. We are, in fact, inviting ourselves and each other into this new possibility. In this space, the minister does not create the congregation. I'm sorry, that's not how it works. The congregation creates ministers, people empowered to care for one another, to talk to one another, to ask questions together, to sit in silence together, to sing together, to plan together, to make promises together, and to live into possibility together. What possibility, might you ask? What possibility? The possibility of a world where all souls are sacred and worthy and treated as such. The possibility of a world where we experience justice, equity, and compassion in our families and our communities and our institutions. the possibility of a world in which we are encouraged to grow and deepen individually and communally. The possibility of a world in which ordinary people speak truth to power and, in fact, have power. Power which we share and use through structures that bring all of our voices to the table with a shared commitment to creating this world together each day. So this month, as your congregation and my congregation and several hundred others across the UU world venture into the question, what does it mean to be a community of hope? I want you to ask and consider, what's the possibility that we are living into as a community? Where are we going? What is your hope for this community? What are the gifts that you will share with this community?
This morning, I'm grateful to have Kaya Bonella light our chalice while I read Determined Seed by Laura Wallace and her mother, Laura. As this frozen earth holds the determined seed, the sacred space holds our weariness, our worry, our laughter, and our celebration. Let us bring seed and soul into the light of thought, the warmth of community, and the hope of love. Let us see together, hear together, love together. Let us worship. Please rise in body or spirit and join me in singing our opening song in the gray hymnal, Dark of Winter, number 55. Now is the time in our service when we share those significant joys and personal sorrows we carry in our hearts and minds. As a community that cares for one another, we want to know about the significant events of one another's lives. By sharing heavy burdens, they are lightened. By sharing joys, they grow. Please raise your hand and wait for the microphone.
Michael Littlefather, I first of all want to thank everybody who has been so kind and considerate and encourage you to get Kathy Swenson to give you her chicken noodle soup recipe. It's absolutely the best. I have nothing but praise for the people at Via Christi who took such good care of me. I didn't need a vasectomy or tubal ligation. But what I did need, they were happy to tend to and to work nicely with my primary care physician as well.
Uh, So I think I mentioned maybe, I don't know, a month ago about my uncle who had some problems, and he ended up passing away. So my father already passed away. That was his older brother, so it's now down to the younger brother as the patriarch of our family. But so we miss him, but he went peacefully. On a completely unrelated note, we're going on sabbatical from January 1st, and so we're looking for anybody who loves plants to foster parent some plants for us for 6 months.
I love those, but they die at my house. Nah.
Anybody who loves plants and doesn't kill them very easily.
Go ahead.
Judy and I are delighted to be hopefully on a downhill course to solve her broken arm, yeah. And we take turns in caring for each other.
I keep looking out the door to make sure I can do this without Lily here. Some of you may have deduced that Lily had kind of a rough week this week, but I wanted you all to know that despite the ups and downs, that at the end of the week she was still a happy, giggly teenager having fun with her friends, which was most important.
May each of us be kindled by a flame of desire for a better world, a world transformed by our willingness to take risks and show up with and for each other. May each of us be held in loving kindness and forgiveness, and with the willingness to create a new story together. May we learn to create together the future we long for, the future we often don't even dare to hope for. Let us dare together and welcome one another and every new person who shows up in this circle of love and possibility. And this way, we may begin to be a people of hope. So may it be. Blessed be.
We have some special music this morning. Our first star player is Star Carol, played by Clara Mayfield, vocals, and Renee Reisner, piano.
Long years ago, on a deep winter
next performer is Helen Mayfield. What Child Is This? On flute, accompanied by Renee Reisner on piano. Thank you, ladies. Now is the time for our story for all ages. The question is, what's in the box? Reverend Sarah will answer that today. If the children and young at heart would like to come forward.
Hello, friends. How many people here have heard of Pandora's box? All right. And most of our kids have heard of Pandora's box. So you probably know that Pandora's box was a gift from Zeus to Pandora and her husband. And what did Zeus tell Pandora about that box? Did you have that answer?
I think I've heard something like it that could be because myths can be different.
What is, so, go ahead. Right, so that is good memory, never to open the box. So it was a beautiful box. It wasn't a box like this. It was super beautiful, and it made her, every time she looked at it, the way you feel when maybe you have a gift that you really want to open, but your parents have told you to wait. Like, if you celebrate Christmas, maybe that happens. Or your birthday, you can see the present sitting there, and you're like, what's in it? I can't take it. I have to open it. So Pandora was really curious, and she really, really, really wanted to open the box, but Zeus said not to open the box. And what happened when she opened the box? I'm going to ask somebody else if they know the answer.
A lot of spirits that were bad came out.
Like all the things that we think are wrong in the world, right? Like being mean and hurting each other and being prideful and being angry and everything you can think of that's a problem in the world, that's what was in the box. What are you remembering? So she's remembering a lot of details that they can't all hear the details you're telling me, but I'm going to say out loud some of the details you're telling me. So they infected all the people around them. In her version of the story, they were bugs and stuff, and they crawled into people and infected them to be really awful to each other. What were you going to say about it? That's right. There was one thing that stayed in the box. What was it? Hope. And so she was trying to close the box, but the box wouldn't close. It wouldn't close. It wouldn't close. She was afraid more horrible stuff was going to come out. But the last thing that came out of the box was hope, right? So I have another story about a box. And these two boxes have a relationship for our conversation later with the adults, but I bet you guys can have your own conversation about the relationship. Have you all seen this book called Extra Yarn? So this book is about a girl named Annabelle, and she knits. How many people here knit? Yeah, so she knits. And what happens is she didn't always knit. She lived in a town that was really black and white. Yeah, there was no color in it. And one day she found a box, and inside the box was some yarn. It was colorful yarn. So she decided to knit herself a sweater. And she did that. And there was still some yarn left over. So she thought, well, I'll knit something for my dog, too. So she knit something for her dog. And suddenly there was a little bit of splash of color in a town that was all black and gray and white. She still had some yarn left over, and so she decided to knit some more. And she knit things for all kinds of folks. She told her teacher that she would knit something for everyone in the town. His name was Mr. Norman, and he said that was impossible. You can't do that. There won't be enough yarn. But lo and behold, there was definitely enough yarn. And everybody in town, everybody in her class, everybody in the school, everybody ended up having something knit from this amazing yarn. No matter their size, no matter how old or young they were, they all got their special knit sweater from the never-ending yarn in this box. So she even made one from, there was a guy in town, maybe you have somebody like this in your town, who always wears shorts and like short sleeve shirts and doesn't really want a sweater, but she even knit him a hat. She had enough yarn for even that. So then she started to knit things, because she just didn't run out. So she knit things for all the animals in town and all the houses and the bird houses, and everywhere in town became suddenly very colorful because it was all covered by her colorful, never-ending yarn from the box. And so word spread all around the world, and a very rich and famous duke from across the ocean heard about her. And he decided to come see for himself because he really loves clothes, and he thought he needed to have a magic sweater from the never-ending yarn. But not only did he want the sweater, he actually wanted the box. So he came and made her an offer. He said, I would like to buy that miraculous box of yarn, and I'm going to offer you $1 million. What do you think she said? No, because you wouldn't sell it, would you? And he got really upset, and he said, $2 million. And she said, no, thanks. $10 million he offered her, and she said, nah, no thanks. So he decided, he was pretty desperate. He really wanted to find out how that box worked. And so he hired somebody to go in the middle of the night and sneak into her house and steal the box. And he took it back across the ocean with him. And when he got back across the ocean, he sat in his castle all by himself, and he opened the box. What do you think he found in the box? Nothing. You're right. There was nothing in the box. Nothing. Hang on just a sec. So he got pretty mad because what? He like went to all that trouble to try to get this magic box, and then there's no magic in it. And he decided he's going to curse the little girl. He says, "Little girl, I curse you and your family with my family's curse. You will never be happy again." But, and can you see what's happening? What happens with the box? The box falls in the water, and somehow it manages to make it back across the ocean, and she finds it again with the knitting needles. And you know what? It turns out that she was definitely happy for the rest of all time, and she lived in her colorful place where she kept knitting from the box that never ended. What did you want to say? Maybe since he stole it, the box didn't work. I think that's true. So we have a story about abundance and a story about hope. And what do you think the relationship is between abundance and hope? What do you think?
What's abundance?
What's abundance?
You'll get more out of life and out of everything if you just choose to have hope.
You'll get more out of life if you choose to have hope in everything. Yeah. Abundance is when you have so much. So she had an abundance of yarn. It was never ending. Abundance is when you see the world as full of possibilities that are good. So that's what we're going to sing you to class thinking about, is the connection between hope and abundance. Oh, Sandy, did I catch you too late? So think about that as you go into your time with your classmates. What does it mean to have hope? What does it mean to have abundance, and how can you get hope from abundance and abundance from hope? Good deal?
Go in love, our hearts go with you. Go in joy, our hopes go true. Learn in love and grow in wisdom. Shine your light in all you do. Go in love, our hearts go with you. Go in joy, our hopes go true.
Speaking of hope, this is our second Sunday. That means helping hands. Our beneficiary today is the Manhattan Emergency Shelter Incorporated, also called MESI. So recently we've been doing Adopt an Ornament, and that means that we have two families at the shelter that we have decided to do a little special Christmas shopping so that they may have a Christmas for themselves and their children, mostly. I have a letter from the representative at MESI who couldn't be here today. Dear members of Unitarian Universalist Fellowship of Manhattan, on behalf of the Manhattan Emergency Shelter, I would like to personally thank you for participating in our annual Adopt an Ornament program. Your contributions will ensure that two families that are current residents at our shelter will be able to have gifts on Christmas morning. One of the families is a single father named Scott. He has an 8-year-old son, Cole, and a 2-year-old daughter, Michelle. Last year, his wife passed away. After facing that emotional hardship, Scott was also hit with financial hardship, which brought him to MESI. Scott was not able to bring many things from their home to MESI, but was forced to leave things behind. Many of the personal belongings that were shared with his wife are gone, and Scott needs to rebuild his stock of items from when his family is able to transition into their new home. Kitchen items and various household items are greatly needed. Cole and Michelle are very excited for Christmas. Cole is praying for Santa to give him a new bike, and Michelle would really love a play kitchen to be able to cook in at her new home. Cole and Michelle are very close to each other and to Scott, and they always bring smiles to each other's faces. The second family is a young single mother with two young daughters. Leah works two jobs to support her daughters, Crystal, age 10, and Amelia, age 8. Leah had Crystal her senior year in high school. She was able to graduate with her high school diploma, but was not able to go to college due to the responsibility of caring for her new baby. She had her youngest daughter, Amelia, 2 years later. Leah has no family support and was recently evicted from her home when she fell behind on her rent. Since checking into MESI, Leah was able to apply for benefits that could help her with food, insurance, and housing in the future. She is planning on applying at a local community college to start classes to become a CNA. Her dream is to be a nurse. Her daughter, Crystal, loves beauty and would love to have her own hair straightener. Amelia loves Barbie dolls and everyone playing dress up with Crystal and Leah. So as you can see, there's two families. There is a time urgency, though, because all these gifts need to be delivered by the end of the week. If you're interested in helping out with the shopping, please talk to Dixie, who's running the craft and bake sale today in the all-sup room. It'd be helpful to have at least two volunteers, and it's important to note that the shopper pays for the gifts and gets reimbursed quickly by UUFM. So the donations today, unless they are not specially marked for UUFM, will go to the shelter. Courtney Albin, our board chair, will provide us with a developmental ministry update.
Good morning. So last month, I shared a brief overview of where the Developmental Ministry Evaluation Committee felt we were with regards to our three developmental ministry goals. We've made progress towards our first goal of becoming a strong, visible, and socially active presence in the community. However, we feel we can do more. We have successfully reached our second goal of moving to a full-time ministerial leadership model. Finally, while we have seen some growth, we have not yet enough to attain our third goal of growing in ways to fully support our goals 1 and 2. So today, I wanted to share some of the specific results we gained from the developmental ministry evaluation that led the committee to the conclusions I just discussed. I will be sharing results from the congregational survey, and Scott's going to help me by reading some quotes gained from participants in the congregational survey and in-person interviews. And I want to point out again that we had 56 members participate in the survey and over 30 members participate in the discussions. And these numbers in themselves show the commitment that this congregation has to our developmental ministry goals. With regards to our first goal, we asked participants to reflect on the visibility of UUFM in the community, and in particularly our engagement in social action. Overall, members believe that the visibility of UUFM within the community has increased during the past 2 years, and that Reverend John Stone has become a well-respected figure in social action matters in Manhattan. 95% of survey respondents agree or strongly agree that UUFM is more visible in the community than it was 2 years ago. 76 strongly agree that the minister's activities in the community are raising the visibility of the fellowship. However, while 77% of respondents strongly agree or agree that they are satisfied with what UUFM does for social action, 9% are not satisfied. And while 56% strongly agree or agree that UUFM is positively viewed by the community, a significant minority, 43%, are unsure.
We are making progress, but still need more presence, more visibility, and more work to actually doing things. John and Lou is amazing, but I think we have more work to do together to make a difference. I think we need to be more visible in the community as representing UUFM. I think we could do more in a larger, more visible group.
And regarding our second goal of moving to a full-time ministerial leadership model, members are satisfied with the support provided by lay leaders and highly respect the service and leadership provided by Reverend John Stone. Trust in lay leaders' leadership was nearly unanimous, with only 2 individuals indicating they were unsure. Nearly 90% of respondents feel they can communicate with lay leaders regarding concerns about the fellowship. 95% trust, and 90% are inspired by our minister's leadership. 87% of respondents report they can communicate concerns about fellowship with the minister.
I've been impressed how well we have adjusted to having a full-time minister and have her lead us. I clearly see that John Lou is a superb and well-balanced leader, and that encourages and has proper regard for lay input. John Lou has set a wonderful example, and speaking for myself, she has been an inspiration getting me more involved. I'm very happy with the work of Reverend John Stone as our full-time minister and as a vocal and present UUFM representative in the community.
Our third developmental ministry goal calls for growing in ways necessary to support a full-time minister. Through membership growth and financial support. To grow our community is important to ensure that current members feel welcome and engaged with UUFM. 87% of respondents agree that they feel connected to the UUFM community. Five individuals were unsure, and 2 reported they did not feel connected. 87% feel encouraged to be involved in the community, and 13% were neutral. 80% indicated they wanted to invite new people to UUFM. 1 respondent disagreed, and nearly 20% were neutral. 95% agree that UUFM enriches their lives. However, 28% of respondents indicated that they felt something is missing from their involvement with UUFM, and 21% neither agreed nor disagreed.
I like that the UFM is not heavy-handed in terms of pushing duties on new members. People are allowed to have the level of commitment they feel comfortable with. Lay leaders in the UFM are also good at following up on comments about how I might be interested in becoming more involved, contacting me, and gently offering possibilities for further involvement if I choose to do so. My only concern about UUFM is regarding the predominantly older age of its membership, aside from the children. There are a few 20-somethings that I see in the fellowship and not enough 30-somethings. The function of church is nourishment and support. I feel lighter at the end than when I went in.
So while we have not fully attained our three developmental goals, I am impressed with what we have accomplished so far, and you should be too. The results from the evaluation show that we are committed to developmental ministry, we trust our lay leaders in Donnelly, and we feel our voices are heard and supported. Yet we are not ready to stop there. We want more. I look forward to finding out where our developmental ministry takes us. The full developmental ministry evaluation report will be available online soon, and I encourage everyone to please join us at the congregational meeting after the Sunday service on January 7th to ensure that we are able to continue our work towards our developmental ministry goals. Thank you.
Thank you, Courtney and Scott. A Blessing of Hope by Jan Richardson. So we may know the hope that is not just for someday, but for this day, here, now, in this moment that opens to us. Hope not made of wishes, but of substance. Hope made of sinew and muscle and bone. Hope that has breath and a beating heart. Hope that will not keep quiet and be polite. Hope that knows how to holler when it's called for. Hope that knows how to sing when there seems to be little cause. Hope that raises us up from the dead, not someday, but this day, every day, again and again and again. Please rise in body or spirit and join me in singing Voice Still and Small in the Gray Hymnal, number 391.
An old rabbi once asked his students how they could tell when the night had ended and the day had begun. "Could it be," asked one of the students, "when you see an animal in the distance and tell whether it is a sheep or a dog?" "No," answered the rabbi. Another asked, "Is it when you look at a tree in the distance and you can tell whether it is a fig or a peach tree?" "No," answered the rabbi. "Then when is it?" they demanded. "It is when you can look in the face of any man or woman and see that it is your sister or brother. Because if you cannot see this, it is still night." So Pandora's box shows up in our lives all the time. It's in the evening news, and in the arguments in our homes, and in the mistakes that we make with each other. It's in our political dogfights, of which we seem to have plenty, and on the street corners of every city. It is in our bodies as illnesses and addiction, and in our minds as indifference and even hatred. It's in our institutions and sometimes even in our dreams, which can sometimes be more like nightmares. I have certainly experienced the sense of despair and hopelessness that can come when the box is open and flooding my life with bad news and painful experiences or unbearable truths. In every situation, I was accompanied by a sense of disconnection as well, of losing my sense of belonging or being rejected, of losing my place. As a child, I first experienced this when my parents divorced. Suddenly, everything I thought I knew about family was no longer true, and I wondered if I even had a family anymore. As a young adult, I experienced this when I moved away from home and lost my sense of being anchored to a family and a place that could take care of me and that knew who I was, knew my authentic self. And even later in life, I myself experienced divorce and became a single parent and despaired that I would ever be able to provide the home and the place of belonging for my daughter that I felt she deserved and had reason to expect. I even lost my house to foreclosure, and I struggled to find enough energy to do all the things that needed doing. Now, recently, I have struggled with a sense of despair and hopelessness as I face more deeply the reality of institutionalized racism and white supremacy that seems to be underlying all aspects of our society, including inside of me. In his book, Community, The Structure of Belonging, Peter Block tells us that the cost of our detachment and disconnection is not only our isolation, our loneliness, but also the fact that there are too many people in our communities whose gifts remain in the margin. The effects of fragmentation of our communities show up as low voter turnout, the struggle to sustain volunteerism, and the large portion of the population who remain disengaged. So my despair isn't just bad for me. It's bad for all of us. So where do I find hope? Annabelle's box came with a sense of abundance and community connection, not available to all who opened it, as our wise children noticed, but available to someone who understood its gift. For me, the never-ending yarn in my box comes from a hope that is connected to a sense of faith in a possible future that is different from the one that I perceive I'm living into now, a different trajectory than the one I see when I am in despair. That faith is a possibility, something I sense, but I don't have evidence of it yet. And faith is in turn a result of being connected to the experience of community, authentic community, that is caring and committed to showing up with one another, to taking a stand for that shared future, just as I think I heard described in your report on your developmental ministry. And committed to wearing perhaps garments knit together from those possibilities, right? Sometimes I don't even know who that community is yet. That community itself is a possibility that I'm creating as I talk to people and listen to people and look for the colorful yarn that I can knit or weave together to connect me to something more than just my own commitment and questions. Block says that community offers the promise of belonging and calls for us to acknowledge our interdependence. So the community that we build together is a result of a conversation that invites us to act as a community and holds us together, that invites us into the possibility of a shared future that contains all of our hopes. Block tells us that to create a more positive and connected future for our communities, we must be willing to trade their problems for their possibilities. And this means that we have to shift away from our focus on individual transformation to focus on what he calls the transformation of human systems, where we create human communities that have a wider sense of belonging among their citizens. In essence, he says, and I agree, that the quality of the relationships, the cohesion that exists among the people in a community determines its overall well-being, creating something that he calls social capital. Block defines social capital as acting on and valuing our interdependence and sense of belonging. It's the extent to which we extend hospitality and affection to one another. Nothing else in our communities can be transformed if we have not created an experience of right relationship with one another. We may come up with as many solutions as we want to all of those snagging problems, those things that came out of Pandora's box, but none of these have any chance of working if we approach these as transactions, ways that we act upon each other, rather than actual, real relationships that cause us to act with one another. So it's why the Duke in our story earlier found nothing in the box. The yarn's magic was in its capacity to connect community members, and this was not available in the mere transaction of money. Or, as Peter Block would say, only when we are connected and the care for the well-being of the whole can we create a civil and democratic society. And I would say that from this perspective, we have had only fleeting experiences of democracy in this country. So how do we build such a community? By focusing on our gifts rather than our deficiencies and developing the web of connections that bring our gifts together through relationships. A movement that's based on this idea is known as asset-based community development. And in this way, we see that sustainable improvements in community occur when citizens discover their own power to act. So we must stop waiting for the right person to be in office, or the wrong person to be out of office, as the case may be, or a smarter person than we believe ourselves to be, to show up and make everything right. What most often is missing in making change occur is us, each of us. We are imperfect and finite. Amen. We are imperfect and finite. We have varying degrees of knowledge and experience and capacity. But we each have the same thing at stake, the possibility of a different future. The first thing we have to do is get into conversation with one another, to listen to one another, to care about each other, and to share ourselves with each other. But the next thing to do is to just keep showing up, even when we're not sure what we should be doing together. The power to act together comes when we show up together. The possibility that we create together is a declaration of what we create in this world each time we show up. It's a condition or value that we want to occur in the world, such as peace, inclusion, relatedness, reconciliation. The possibilities that I work to embody are capacity building and collaboration, people using their gifts to make the world a better place, empowering people to bring their gifts, walk their journey, speak their truth. But I'm also very interested in the idea of a specific type of social capital called bridging capital. Bridging capital brings people into contexts, and it creates a bridge between groups of people and experiences that otherwise would not connect or be related. Bonding capital is what happens when we deepen our relationships with people who are like us. Bridging capital happens when we truly embrace the idea that we don't have to think alike to love alike. Block says that a pluralistic democracy requires lots of bridging capital. So congregations and smaller organizations always run the risk of having lots of bonding social capital without enough bridging social capital. And since I've been here in Kansas and Topeka, I find myself constantly reaching out to new organizations and groups of people, as well as making time to deepen my relationship with folks I already have relationship with. But this is not an easy tension to hold. Sometimes I found that just showing up in a new and different place with new and different people can shift my understanding of our context in important ways. A month or so ago, I attended the Midwestern Chicana Symposium, Art and Resistance in the Age of Extremism. Not only did I meet people I might not have met otherwise, I also learned about books, art, and life experiences that deepened my understanding of the context and the gifts that I bring, the gifts others bring to our future. Seen from the lens of these presenters, the problems that the dominant culture assigns to the marginalized become opportunities to apply different gifts and to live into new possibilities. Empowered to create an alternative future, these women, mostly women, were choosing to bring a certain quality into their lives. And as Block says, we have the capacity to change the community story, to reclaim the power to name what is worth talking about, and to bring a new context into being. So I also experienced this opening up just yesterday when I was in Wichita, Kansas, meeting with the Kansas People Agenda organizers. We had many new people in the room, and they represented many new contexts, more people of color, more people under the age of 30, more people outside the binaries of heterosexist culture. So bridging capital, creating it, is a whole lot more work. It requires us to listen more, to adapt quickly, and we will make mistakes because we can't make assumptions about where we are headed together and who will do what. Building trust and relationship is more work and requires skills that sometimes I find I haven't even developed yet, to be honest. So we have to learn to practice embodying the qualities we want to see in the larger community, right here in our smaller communities. Each time we gather, we have the opportunity to practice being the people we hope to be, living into the possibility of who we can be. In creating this community and in responding to structures in the larger community that we hope to have impact on, structures like city government, police departments, neighborhoods or schools, we must remember that people will be accountable and committed to what they had a hand in creating. So in this congregation and in my home congregation, we invite you to come to congregational meetings, to serve on committees, or to volunteer for community services or projects. And while this certainly serves the whole, it also serves you. This is interdependence at work. When I said earlier that this is a congregation that creates ministers out of members, I meant it, because to me that's what Unitarian Universalism is. The point of showing up on Sunday isn't to see what your minister or your guest pulpit exchange minister will say or how well they will say it. The point is for each of us to engage in building that alternative future together. And we do this by showing up for each other, listening to each other, sharing the tasks of creating community with each other, asking questions together. People will be accountable and committed to what they have a hand in creating. So we invite you to help this community, both this one embodied in the UU Fellowship of Manhattan, as well as this larger body of what we call Unitarian Universalism across the state and the country, and even that larger community of the communities that we're connected to. We invite you to help create these congregations and organizations to create Topeka, Kansas, Manhattan, Wichita, all the communities that connect with each other and share a version of what that alternative future, where we are more related to one another and more committed to each other's well-being, could look like. In particular, I hope that we will build a restorative community. Block says that the essence of a restorative community is not economic prosperity or political discourse or the capacity of leadership. It is in the citizens' willingness to own up to their contribution, to be humble, to choose accountability, and to have faith in their own capacity to make authentic promises to create that alternative future. So we must choose and be accountable rather than be entitled. We must choose to be accountable rather than be entitled. So for this reason, I'm always moved by the story of Jesus calling the first disciples. I think we focus way too much on Jesus in this story, maybe many of the stories in which he shows up. I want you to imagine for a moment instead the experience of the fishermen in this story. They are ordinary working men asked to see the world differently and then to step into an entirely different future based on that new understanding of their capacity. The role of the leader here is to invite the community into a new and alternative future, a new set of possibilities that earlier were not just not possible, they were viewed as impossible. They were actually completely unthought of. And so here's the story. Once, while Jesus was standing beside the lake of Gennesaret, and the crowd was pressing in on him to hear the word of God, he saw two boats there at the shore of the lake. The fishermen had gone out of them and were washing their nets. He got into one of the boats, the one belonging to Simon, and asked him to put out a little way from the shore. And then he sat down and taught the crowds from the boat. When he'd finished speaking, he said to Simon, "Put out into the deep water and let down your nets for a catch." And Simon answered, "Master, we've worked all night long but have caught nothing. Yet if you say so, I will let down the nets." And when they had done this, they caught so many fish that their nets were beginning to break. So they signaled their partners in the other boat to come and help them. And they came and filled both boats so that they began to sink. But when Peter Simon saw it, he fell down at Jesus' knees, saying, "Go away from me, Lord, for I am a sinful man." For all who were with him were amazed at the catch of fish they had taken. And so also were James and John, sons of Zebedee, who were partners with Simon. Then Jesus said to Simon, "Do not be afraid. From now on, you will be catching people." And when they had brought their boats to shore, they left everything and followed him. What did these disciples manage to do with these newly discovered capacities? How did they overcome doubts and a sense of inadequacy? What a shift. They didn't, because living into a new possibility doesn't ask us to be experts or to know anything, really. It asks us to show up, to have faith and hope, and to use our gifts to figure it out, to live into the new possibilities. Jesus simply revealed that there was more capacity than they believed there to be. There is more capacity in this room and in each of you and in this whole community than you sometimes believe there to be. I'm going to say that again. There is more capacity in this room and in this community than we sometimes believe there to be. So whether I'm in conversation with someone about the challenges that they're currently facing, like a loss of a job or a chronic illness, or a relationship that is in jeopardy, or I'm working with a community addressing systemic racism and policing, or developing a statewide coalition that is building bridging social capital to support and promote the well-being of all people, I am committed to capacity building and collaboration. A community of hope is a community of possibility, a community willing to take risks together, ask questions together, disagree, and listen more deeply. A community of hope is willing to cast the net one more time and remain open to outcomes that didn't seem possible before. A community of hope is willing to set down the net and walk into an entirely different future together because the conversation they're engaging invites them to do so. A community of hope lives from a place of abundance, never scarcity. And like the story of Annabelle, there will always be enough yarn to bring color and warmth and a sense of connection in a community of hope. Hope creates an abundance, and abundance as a lens helps us to see hope everywhere. A community of hope recognizes each person as a brother or sister, someone related to us no matter how different from us, and invites all of us to be engaged in the work of building and transforming the future that we will share. Blessings to you as a community of hope. Amen. And won't you join in singing number 354, We Laugh, We Cry.
Thank you.
life and love, justice and peace, day in and day out, wait weary tasks. Burdens we lift again, worn paths we wear some more, want and means worn thin and fatigue. Pain and grief, coldness of heart, bitter and weary days where we know desolation, how do we call forth hope? When our hearts buried, sunken down, how do we dig up, rise up? What healing touch do we long for? What balm might we take and share? Come what may, O Spirit of life, may we keep a ray of light for our inward path, a living water in the depths of us, a cleansing breath at our core. May we keep them for ourselves and to share. May we call forth from each other vitality and tenacity. May love rest in us. May justice live through us. May we have the touch to call each other's back to life and love, justice and peace. May we sing back their songs and add the alleluias. Amen and alleluia. And the Spirit by the Spirit and with the Spirit giving power, so may it be. Go in peace. Enjoy the lovely gifts and things you have yet to buy.
Thank you, Sarah. I do have a couple of announcements from the craft and bake sale. We did move coffee into the Alsop room, so it's in the corner. And join us there. If you would like to do a photo booth, that will be set up. And there'll be a can for donations in cash. But if you want to add it to your total and do it electronically, you can do that when you check out in the Alsop room. And then if you brought anything, please make sure that you have labeled it with a cash value. There are a few things that aren't stickered yet. And there was one more thing. I got that. Oh, if you would like to help shopping for the shelter that we read earlier, please talk to Dixie. Thank you.